Welcome to the Echo Church podcast. We hope you enjoy this message.
In January, I preached, the last time I spoke on the only miracle in the New Testaments, in all four New Testaments, other than the resurrection, that's recorded in all four, which was the... Oh, great. There is one miracle in all four Gospels other than the resurrection, the fishes and the loaves, feeding of the 5,000. Yeah, triggered your memories now. And there was so much in that we opened up and we talked about and we shared. And I just want to start this message and the onset to say there is so much to the Bible. There is so much in everything, every detail, every action, every word, every sentence. There is not just one dimensional to it. It is multifaceted. It layers into other points, other areas of the Bible. It opens up to be far greater than just our reading it, surface value, and applying it to our lives. There's so much more to it. And so that story I shared a whole lot from. Today we're going to open up another miracle, and I want to say from the start, there is so much more to this passage than what I'm going to have time to open up or that I feel to share. There is so much more to this that when you read the Bible, I want to encourage, not if, notice how I said when. When you read your Bible, I want to encourage you, don't just read it and move on. But read it and sit and ask questions and look at Greek and look at Bible commentaries and allow God to open up, because it doesn't just say something for the sake of saying it. There is so much more to the Bible than just reading it once through, done and dusted. All right? So today's passage is the same. I'm not covering it all, but what I am covering, I feel, is really what needs to be said today. So I'm reading John chapter 2, 1 to 11 from the Passion. It is completely different. So if you're going to read through on your NIV, you're not going to get the same words. Oh my goodness. Same heart, not same words. Here we go. On the third day, Jesus' mother went to a wedding. See, right there, when it says on the third day, there is so much into on the third day, but I'm not covering it. So on the third day, if you want to do a research on that, highly recommend. On the third day, Jesus' mother went to a wedding feast in the Galilean village of Cana. Jesus and his disciples were all invited to the banquet, but with so many guests, they ran out of wine. And when Mary realized that, she came to Jesus and asked, "They have no wine. Can't you do something about it?" Jesus replied, "My dear one, don't you understand that if I do this, it will change nothing for you, but it will change everything for me. My hour of unveiling my power has not yet come." Mary then went to the servants and told them, "Whatever Jesus tells you, do it." Nearby stood six stone water pots meant to be used for the Jewish washing rituals. Each one could hold about 20 gallons or more. Jesus came to the servers and instructed them, "Fill the pots with water right to the very brim." And then he said, "Now fill your pitchers and take them to the master of ceremonies." When they poured out their pitchers for the master of ceremonies to sample, the water had become wine. When he tested the water that had become wine, the master of ceremonies was impressed with its quality. Although he did not know where the wine had come from, only the servers knew. He called the bridegroom over and said to him, "Every host serves the best wine first until everyone has had a cup or two. Then he serves the cheaper wine. But you, my friend, you've reserved the most exquisite wine till now." This miracle in Canaan was the first of the many extraordinary miracles Jesus performed in Galilee that revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. It's a pretty cool miracle, isn't it? Very good miracle. The first public miracle of Jesus. First, public miracle of Jesus. So here's Jesus, been living his life quite quietly, quite silently, nothing big, no big commotion, no big followings of people. He's only just gathered his disciples, but no public miracle up until now. And there is so much from this story that we're going to look into right now. I just want to highlight, now, just because I don't say something doesn't mean I'm not saying something. Is that what I mean? Like, you know when you say we're going to play Tiggy and the rules are Tiggy, you've got to touch people and then they're it? That's the rules. Now, my child or other kids that I used to run youth ministry with would then find other ways of going about it and then argue that they were right. And so when I explain things, I then have to say, and that's it. There's no other ways around it. There's no other times to figure out how to, this is it. Oh, jeepers. So there's a law of firsts. You've heard of that, the law of firsts. When you teach a child something the first time, that's what they believe. Whether it's true or not, that's what they believe. The law of firsts. So you want to make sure if you've got young children, you're teaching them the good stuff, the right stuff. You're teaching them truth and not allowing the world to teach them otherwise. So the law of firsts. So this tells me it's the same in the Bible. This is the first miracle, public miracle Jesus did. So there's a lot in this miracle we need to take note of. The first thing I want to highlight is the first miracles at a wedding. The first miracle is at a wedding. It could have been at any location. It could have been at any event. It could have been at any moment. But he chose a wedding. Jesus chose the first miracle, his coming out miracle, at a wedding. Can I just side note, God believes in marriage far more than you currently do. God is so for marriage, so much more than what you currently realize. Now, I'm not having a go. Here's what I'm not saying. If you're in an abusive relationship, you must stay. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that God created marriage. It is his intent. It is his passion. It is his design. It is his idea. He created a marriage. And he's one to be held, upheld, one to be looked after, one to be fostered. If you've got children, I understand how busy life can get, going from this event to this event to this event to this event. And often in the going from this event and this parenting moment and this thing, you can lose your connection in your marriage. But we mustn't forget the very reason why we said yes to begin with. Once upon a time, they were our best friend and we actually liked them. We mustn't forget that once upon a time moment, but in fact make the utmost care in stewarding that time, in not just stewarding that time, but allowing that to grow in our lives. Jesus could have shown any moment at any time his first miracle, but he chose at a wedding ceremony. Can we just celebrate God loves marriage? His intent was for marriage. I want to encourage everyone in here, if your marriage is not the greatest at the moment, it's time for a new normal and flick the switch. It's time to step into deciding, I once liked this person, I'm going to again, and it starts now. Is that okay? So we move on from there, and at the wedding there's Mary. Now, you've got to assume Mary is somewhat close to the bridegroom. She knows the family. How do we have to assume that? Because she finds out that there's no wine. And someone finding that piece of information out is not going to be a nobody. Like if I'm at a wedding and it's got nothing to do with me and there's no wine, I will not know that piece of information. Only someone in the know is going to know that piece of information. And all we know is Mary's the only one that knows. We don't know that the bridegroom knows. We don't know that the master of ceremonies know because they're not causing a fuss about it. Only Mary's causing a fuss about it. She knows wine's gone. And what does she do about that? She has options right here. She has options to act and options to go past. But here, all right, let's put it this way. If I'm at a wedding and there's no wine and I've got servants, my likely response is going to be, servants, go out into town and bring the wine back into the house. Go out into town, buy the wine, get the wine, steal the wine, do whatever you've got to do for the wine, but bring wine here. And she's got that option, but what does she do? She looks at Jesus and goes, Jesus, there's no wine. Now, just think about this. This is Jesus' first public miracle. First public miracle, here he is, and Mary looks to him and says, do something. Do something. What has Jesus done to cause Mary to go, Jesus can do something about this? What's he done? Because this is his first public miracle. This is the first time he's showing what he's capable of, who he is. It's the first time he's showing the world who he is. And here's Mary saying, Jesus, you do something. She doesn't go to the bridegroom to fix it. She doesn't go to the master of ceremonies to fix it. She doesn't boss the servants around to fix it. She says, Jesus, do something. My question is, what has Mary seen to allow her to ask that question? What has Mary witnessed? What has Mary observed? What has Mary been a part of in the private to set in the public, do something? It's just a question. I don't have the answer. I've got proposals, but she's seen something enough to say, Jesus, we have no wine. Can you fix this? Jesus, we have no wine. And then Jesus' response says it all, doesn't it? We know that he didn't want to die on the cross physically. He wanted the outcome. But he's like, pass this cup from me. I want to do this. And here's Jesus at this very moment in time going, the moment I step out and do this, it all changes. It all changes. And Jesus could have done nothing. I just want to side note this. In most of your translations, the word's going to be woman. Woman. Jesus isn't referencing his mum as a woman in today's terminology of woman. Just want to highlight that. The Greek word is actually my lady. My lady. It's respect. It's not woman. And here's Jesus, could have done nothing, could have shut the whole thing down, because we know he didn't want to do it. But what does he do? He tells the servants then not to go and get the wine, which he could have done. He could have told the servants, you guys go out into the town, go out and get as much wine as you can, go out and bring it in, and I'm not going to start this snowball effect of what the world is about to see. I'm going to prolong my nice life here on earth before I have to go through the greatest torture anyone will ever go through. But he doesn't. What does he tell them to do? Go and get water. Go and fill these water pots up to the brim. Fill them full. So this is Jesus' instruction. Now, just they don't have hoses. They don't have a water tap. So it's not like it's an easy job to do. It's not like the servants can go, okay, yeah, we'll just fill it up with water. Easy job, hose it, hook it up, done. This is a big job. These water pots, 30 gallons, look, the equivalent of the six pots is between 450 to 680 litres. Now, I don't know about you, but how many litres can you carry in a bucket at one time? So we're talking about a lot of water going into these pots, back and forth, back and forth. And I don't know how big their buckets were to transport it, but it is a taxing, tiring, full-on job that Jesus has asked them to do. And these servants, do you know what they do? They do it. They know they need wine, but they go to the well to collect water. Side note, when Jesus asks us something, when God puts a prompting in our hearts, something to challenge us in our spirit, when God asks us to do something or step into a moment of time, it's not then for us to go, no, you need wine, let me go fix the wine, fetch the wine. I know you said water, but I can do it even better. Wow. But these servants went and got the water. How often are we guilty? Let me rephrase that. How often am I guilty of feeling like God asking me to do something and go, yeah, I'll do it my way. I'll do it to how it works for me, for what's comfortable for me. It might not cost me as much as I do it this way, but it's the same result, so I'll just do it my way. But here's these servants being given an order by Jesus. They haven't experienced Jesus the same way as Mary. It's not like they know who Jesus is. He's just invited to the wedding. He's just a guest to the wedding. They haven't seen him in operation before. They have no idea anything about him. But yet they do what he says. So these servants go and fetch the water and fill up these pots. And then they obey in the take the water and feed the master ceremonies. Like these servants, it's not like there's a hotel or a restaurant down the road that they can get another job at. These servants are about to give the person in charge what they feel is water. Their job is on the line. And they do it. What's fascinating about this moment, this passage, these couple of verses here is not once. You know how I mentioned at the start of the sermon the law of the first? Get a load of this. Not once did Jesus command the water to turn to wine. Not once did Jesus pray for the water to turn to wine. Not once did Jesus mention water turning into wine. He just said, fill up the pots, go and taste it. Go and give it to the master to taste. Allow that to tweak everything inside of you on how you believe miracles should be done. Because the first miracle Jesus did, he didn't use any wording that we would do. He didn't do it how we would think he should do it. He not only doesn't do it how we think he should do it, but he doesn't even give 10 steps on how we should do it. He makes it as simple and as basic that you cannot make one single formula out of it. You can't copy it. There is no method in seeing a miracle. There is no way to go about seeing a miracle. There's no right way. There is no way. There's nothing there. He hasn't shown us how we should do this. I'll come back to that in a second. So the servants give the master of ceremonies the water, which is now wine. And the master of ceremonies has no idea how this wine has come to pass, how this wine has happened. Only the servants do. Here's what I want to say about that. You living your life, you will never miss out on seeing, on being a part of the miracle. You need to understand, because you go, yeah, the servants got to see the miracle, but the people at the wedding didn't. They missed out. No, they didn't. See, wine at weddings meant joy, meant celebration, meant a whole lot of things. Wine at a wedding was instrumental. It wasn't like just a small little side token. It was the main kind of thing that people gathered around. And so if the wine dried up and there was no more wine, what does that mean? The party finishes, comes to an end. everyone goes home. See you later. I'm not hanging around. So the witnesses got to witness, the servants got to witness the miracle, but the people at the wedding got to receive the miracle. Whether they knew it or not, they lived in it. Every miracle that goes on around us has a flow-on effect onto your life, has a flow-on effect onto you, whether you know it or not. The people, the guests at the wedding, may have had no idea of what had just happened, but yet they got to enjoy the flow-on effect of what just happened. They got to enjoy the joy of the miracle. They got to enjoy that moment that they were completely oblivious by. So like at the start when I said the Bible is so multifaceted that when you read something there is so much more into it, it's the same with any miracle. Anything God does, it's not just for one person, it's not just for one moment, it's not just for one instance. The flow-on effect is massive. And you get to partake in that. And you get to celebrate in that. And you get to receive in that, just like they did at the wedding just then. And then the big thing about this, a character I haven't talked about, is the bridegroom. Now let me put him in context for you. The bridegroom was in charge of the wine. No digs there, just saying. Bridegroom was in charge of the wine. What that meant was, in that day, if the bridegroom didn't have enough wine for the wedding, and weddings went between 3 to 7 days, if the bridegroom didn't have enough wine, what that said was, my family is poor, I don't have enough money to provide, my wife may leave me now because it doesn't look like I can organise a wedding, I can plan ahead, it doesn't look like I'm responsible enough to actually be a husband, or I have the finances enough to provide for my wife. So not having enough wine isn't just a, oh, well, doesn't matter. I don't drink wine, so for me it's not a big deal. No wine, I'm still having a good party. But in that party and in that situation, in that setting, no wine actually meant he is now shamed, he is now ridiculed, he may be wifeless. The flow-on effect of no wine for the bridegroom is massive. It's huge. The law of the first, here we go. God cares about weddings. God shows us no tools on how to see a miracle. God cares so much about your inside world that his first miracle isn't the healing the 10 lepers. It isn't raising Lazarus from the dead, which would be a pretty good first miracle, but it is stopping someone having shame. God cares so much about your life, about what's going on inside your life, about your thoughts, about how you see yourself, about how others see you. God cares so much about your life that he demonstrated his first miracle to be an internal miracle, not an external one. Like if that was me, I'd be doing Lazarus, to be honest. Raising someone from the dead. Like, how epic would that be? Like, hello, world. Lazarus, come out. Not Jesus. Not Jesus. He stopped the shame from a groom. That's how he came himself. That's how he revealed himself. A couple of things that I want to challenge us on today from this story. Our new normal needs to become public. What's private needs to become public. Now, that statement right now is going to scare a couple of you, because what's going on private, you don't want anyone to see in public. Twofold here. My heart intent in saying that statement, what's happening in private needs to become public. Mary took what was happening in private, what she was witnessing and experiencing with her son in private, she called it into the public arena. What you are doing with God, your time with the Lord, your quiet times, your moments with Him need to become public. Quiet time is a stupid saying. Sorry. I believe quiet time is the wrong words, because it should never stay quiet. Yes, there are things that God does in us that for a moment we don't share, but at the right time it becomes public, because we share on the goodness of who He is. We tell people on the goodness of who He is. It needs to become public. Your voice on who God is needs to become public. Your relationship with who He is needs to become public. Second thought, if you're doing things in private you don't want in public, Jesus showed no shame. He took away shame. So here's what I'm going to say. Go and talk to someone. Have a conversation with someone, because there's no shame. But light dismantles darkness. The second thing I want to challenge us on today is our new normal needs to get better. Our new normal needs to get better. The master of ceremonies said, people normally do the good wine first and then the bad wine second. But you've gone the good wine first and the more exquisite wine second. Your new normal needs to get better. Your walk with the Lord needs to get better. Your time with the Lord needs to get better. How you view Him needs to get better. How you experience Him needs to get better. Your new normal needs to get better. Staying where you are, you will run out. But with God, it only gets better. My third thought, which I mentioned, when you need a miracle, don't go looking for a formula. Don't go looking for how it should be done or shouldn't be done. Don't go looking for if, buts, maybes. Don't go looking for this is what Jesus would have done, could have done. There is no formula. There is no formula. But I shared with the leaders on our leaders meeting Monday night. I've heard, so there was a but there. Let me share and then it'll answer. I shared with the leaders on Monday night, our leaders meeting, something that God's been stirring in me and challenging me on. And it's the phrase, what would Jesus do? I have heard in my teenage years, when that slogan first came out, I heard so many sermons on what would Jesus do, good and bad, as in not a bad sermon, but people saying it's a stupid saying sermon. I've heard so many sermons on this. And what I've been challenged with is, what would Jesus do? This phrase, what would He do? Because in that moment of time, here's Jesus saying no, and yet He does the miracle. I don't want to do this, but He does it. What changed between, I don't want to do this, woman, what has it got to do with me, to actually fill up the water? Fill up the pots of water. What changed? He saw His Father say and do what He then did. So the saying, what would Jesus do, I believe is not about the miracles, not about praying for the sick, not about all the good deeds, which is good and we need to do. But the first thing Jesus did every time was look to His Father. Every time. See His Father. What would God do right now? What would my Father do right now? And that's how I'm going to live my life. As simple as that is to say, it's a lot harder to live. A lot harder to, well, okay, Lee finds it a lot harder to live. I can preach it, I can say it, I can go, this is as simplistic as it needs to be. My life needs to look like looking at my Father, saying, doing what I see Him say and do. I don't always do that, because why? Lee thinks she has great ideas and she does those. I need to stop that. What would Jesus do? See and do what he sees his Father say and do.